Spiritual Life Center. Transforming lives as we love, serve, and remember who we are.
One heart.
We greet you in the name of all that is good, all that is sacred, and in the warm and loving energy of this community, Spiritual Life Center. If you're joining us for the first time, we especially want to welcome you because we know that you are not here by accident. You're here by divine appointment. Thank you for joining us on your unique path today, and we hope you enjoy this special message from this past Sunday's service.
But sometimes we do look backwards to help us move forward. I was sharing earlier that sometimes things happen in history that I can actually remember where others have to look it up on Google. Time is flying by. But in the late 80s, there were three very promising world-class sprinters, runners, that represented the country of Jamaica. And they were setting out to qualify for the Olympics in 1988. They were not only favored, because that's some magnificent runners, but they were expected to win a medal or two or three or more. But this particular group had their dreams crushed, because in an instant, they failed to qualify because one of the members of the team stumbled and they knocked over the other two, and they were out of the race. Needless to say, they were bummed out. You know, they'd probably been working for 4 years, training and doing so much over that period of time. And to have it just pulled out from under them was devastating for them. And at first, they dwelled upon the mistakes they had made and who messed up and who was to blame for this to happen. And then one of the runners was hit with an inspiration. He stopped dwelling on the misfortune of the past, and he began to catch a different vision. It began to just show up in his mind. And his vision was to enter the bobsled competition in the Winter Olympics. Now, understand this. It does not snow in Jamaica. They don't have bobsled teams in Jamaica. But he decided to recruit a friend who happened to be the go-kart derby champion. And he figured, hey, close enough. So make a long story short, they put together a team and they qualified for those Winter Olympics. They got actually to the final round of competition. And during the final race, unfortunately, again, they crashed. But the story turned out to be a good one. Their whole experience was turned into a film, if you ever watched it, called Cool Runnings. Cool Runnings, man. And it became a box office hit. Now, I know the writers of the script took some creative license to write the movie, but it's a good backdrop for my topic for today, which is don't look back, except. Now, there's always a couple of exceptions, and we'll look at those. Because we want to hear first and foremost, we don't want to look back all of the time. You know, in Proverbs, in Solomon of Proverbs, it says, without a vision, people perish. And ultimately, we must be captured by a vision in our life that's planted in our heart, even before we took this incarnation, even before we were born, to pull out the highest and best within us. But there's so many people who live in retrospect. Live with a backward glance. Live life in a metaphorical prison with the doors wide open, but are afraid to leave. They're living in a paradigm. They're living in a habitual way of thinking. And what that does, it prevents the greatness from moving through them, but not us, not here. Now, sometimes we hear this word paradigm is tossed around frequently these days. And the word is thrown out to let people know they know something. They say things like, a new paradigm is happening. And let everybody know, they know a little bit about whatever's happening in the world. So if you don't know anything, you walk into a room of strangers, just say, paradigm. And they'll just, they'll say, oh man, he's deep. We say something about, oh, the cellular level of my being. Ooh. But we know a paradigm is nothing but a habitual way of looking at life. It's a habitual way of thinking. And a paradigm shift means the person has stepped out of the habit of their normal way of living and thrown the doors wide open to see new possibilities. All of us somewhere have lived or live in sometimes the prisons of our habits with the doors wide open, and sometimes we refuse to come out. But today we're going to say, don't look back, accept. You know, there's a person in the Bible who personifies the backward glance, and that's Lot's wife in the story in Genesis. And we talked about that when we had the Bible class a few months ago. And to your background, Lot and Abram were brothers, and Abram had answered a call of spirit to set up a great nation to fulfill the covenants, the promises of God. And it reads in that story that they were in Sodom and Gomorrah, and it was about to be destroyed, and an angel tells Lot, take your family out the city, get out of Dodge. So Lot takes the family away from Sodom and Gomorrah. And by the way, Sodom and Gomorrah is nothing more than a symbol for the material way of seeing the world, the surface way of seeing the world, not from a spiritual perspective. It's a surface way of living. And sometimes that surface is being destroyed so a new paradigm can happen. But anyway, Lot's wife turns and she looks back. And she says in that scripture that she turned into a pillar of salt. And there's a couple of meanings of that phrase. It means that she was petrified with fear and she died of a heart attack. Or the salt symbolizes a preservative, preserving a memory of how things used to be, longing for the old days. And she was paralyzed and she turned to that pillar of salt. She looked back. And there was a little kid who was in Sunday school one time and they were reading over this story. And the little girl piped up and said, you know, my mommy turned back and she turned into a telephone pole. They have their own interpretations of these stories. But the whole idea is do not live life with the backward glance. Sometimes we hear people speak and they're quick to say about someone else, oh, I knew them when. I knew when they weren't all that. You know, I think about that. Some people I grew up with a long time ago, and they see I'm a minister now. So how can you do that? I mean, I knew you when. But it's usually an indication that the person is still living from a backward glance, still have a tendency to see where you may have been stuck at some point in the past. And if anyone's trying to put that on you, you can say to yourself, well, you may have known me when, but God knew me then, God knows me now, and God knows me forever. And I've always had something about me that's been okay with the presence of God. So a person who's living backwards will constantly be in that particular space and say, I knew them when. But it's an indication they ain't all that big of a deal. That's what they're thinking. They haven't done that much. I knew them where they came from. But if they knew really where they came from, they would know that they came from the presence and the power and the love of God, which is all good. So we want to check ourselves as sometimes as we're listening to talks, and sometimes there's a tendency to think, well, I sure wish so-and-so was here. They would get a lot out of this talk. But let us be clear. The talk is about us and for us. So we check ourselves where we're living, oh, I knew them when. And see where we are stuck and have turned back and becoming petrified with a backward view and stunting our own spiritual growth. Because there are individuals who have that backward viewpoint and are sometimes regurgitating, they're recanting and reliving and remembering childhood experiences. And sometimes they store them up and they may refuse to get beyond them. They refuse to try to heal them, transform them, reinterpret them. You know, just one of the reasons you take the Quantum Living course is just a shout out to that class. It'll help you give a tool to let go of those things and be more empowered about how they are showing up. But sometimes we kind of store them up and save them just in case. We need them for excuses or our life is not working. We have that in our back pocket. Someone will say and come up to somebody and say, well, are you living your dream? Are you following on your instincts of what you should be doing in your life? And you say, well, let me tell you. When I was 5 years old, my mother dropped me and she thought it was funny. And I've been emotionally damaged ever since. You know, when I was 8 years old, you know, I didn't get that gift that I wanted. And, you know, I was the oldest child. I was the middle child. I was the youngest child. Take your pick. Doesn't really matter. Therefore, I never was able to get the love or the intimacy and the resources, whatever it was that I needed. You know, I didn't know my parents. I didn't know who they were, and I was upset. Oh, I knew who they were, and I didn't like them. It didn't matter. These individuals will retell childhood experiences and create a paradigm of excuses so they can have something to fall back on just in case they cannot live their vision, their dream. They've made no real decision to live from that vision. They're kind of hoping that life will turn out okay. And they're kind of hoping it's going to be all right, forgetting that they're co-creators with their own destiny, as all of us are. So on some level, they have chosen whom they shall serve. Because we always have the choice, you know, choose who you shall serve, God or vision. Are you going to serve God or the mammon, which is the sense consciousness, the Sodom and Gomorrah consciousness? On some level, we always have to decide, and decide simply means to cut away everything that is not in keeping with the vision and live the life that we're ordained to live and release the excuses to the nothingness from which they have come. Don't look back. You know, there are people who sometimes live with the backward glance and always talking about the good old days. You know, they had their Instagram moment, 15 minutes of fame and glory. You know, as I thought about that, there was a woman who was on a plane. And I don't know, she probably violated some rule and so forth. And they were escorting her off the plane. And she was yelling and screaming. And some people said something to her. And she said, well, I'm Instagram famous. What are you? Okay. All right. Anyway, just move on. The idea is that some such folks sometimes have not progressed any further. And as soon as anyone talks about a vision or bringing more of ourselves out than we ever thought was possible, they'll wax nostalgic. They'll talk about the good old days. But sometimes your mind is playing tricks on us because we realize they weren't all that good. They were all right. And no matter how good they were, we understand that they're simply building blocks and stepping stones to a greater expression of the presence of God. Because no matter what we have done or not done, there's always more in us waiting to be expressed, to do more, be more, and express more of who and what we really are. So if we're still living in the good old days, that we're doing is wasting away the divine energies that are within us. And we're thwarting the capabilities that are waiting, urging us to go forth. You know, there's a statement in the Gospel of Thomas. The Gospel of Thomas is one of those books that didn't make it into the formal Bible. You know, there's a whole history on how the Bible was put in. There were some people who had power and they said, well, we like this book. Put it in. We don't like this book. It's giving the people too much information. But anyway, this is one of those books that they left out the formal Bible. And what it says in the Gospel of Thomas, that if you bring forth that which is within you, it will save you. But if you do not bring off that which is within you, it will destroy you. It will kill you, it says in some versions. You know, if in fact we're living from the good old days, then what we're doing, we're frustrating the divine power that is there. It is this very moment waiting to help us be more and be what we're destined to be. And that simply means we have to question ourselves. We need to ask ourselves, is the vision and the subsequent goals worthy of my life? But oftentimes people reverse the question asks, am I worthy of the vision? It's really the other way around. Is the vision worthy of my life? Is it worthy of my time? Is it worthy of my attention? Is it worthy of my prayer work and my meditation? Is the vision and all the subsequent goals I'm holding on, is it worthy of me? If not, you got to have a bigger vision. You know, there are in lives of people who have done great things in their life, you know, shifted consciousness in a huge way. And I've saw them being interviewed at some point, and one of them said, you know, if you had to live your life over, what would you do different? And that person said, oh, I'd have a bigger vision. Now, this is coming out of people who have done something significant with their life. They've transformed consciousness. They said, I dream too small. So you must ask, is the vision worthy of my heart, worthy of me? Because we need to understand that God's gift to us is so much talent, so much capability, so much energy, that we can never use or develop it all in a single lifetime. And our gift to God is to develop as much talent and capability as we can in a single lifetime. Hear that. God gives us so much that we can't develop it all. And our gift to God is to develop as much as we can. You know, my grandmother-in-law used to say that, you know, in her life, she's going to wear out. She is not going to rust out. She was working till her last day, getting up early in the morning, you know, fixing everybody breakfast and biscuits and stuff. It didn't matter. She was always on it. And if we think upon these lines, then we'll realize that we can start making decisions and moving in the direction of the vision that Spirit has for us. We'll break away the habit of just being regular. We'll begin to activate the great power that is within us that we can move through, even if we don't know how a particular thing in life is going to turn out. We simply be willing to have the vision that's worthy of our life. And it'll pull things out that we cannot have pulled out unless we say yes. So don't look back. Rather, we look upon the hills from which cometh our help, which means lift our attention, release excuses, and make a decision. Like I said, a decision means we cut away everything that's unlike the certainty of what we've decided on. You know, I was talking to a young man whose mom asked me to give him some counseling, and he's a really good athlete. He had gotten hurt when he was in college playing basketball. He's trying to make it in the NBA, and now he's in, you know, the G League and playing overseas, and he's wondering whether or not he should continue, and is it worth it, and, you know, or whether he should take this job that might pay him pretty good, and he won't have to worry about bills anymore. And I said, you know, you got to just make a decision. It doesn't matter which decision you make, but land on a decision. And the universe will conspire in a way you never imagined. You know, I remember when I was about to go to ministerial school, and I always, if I said before, if I had written 1,000 things that would be in my life, being a minister was not on one of them. It was not on the list. But somehow the universe kicked me in the butt and told me to do this. So I remember when I was deciding whether I should go or not, and I said, okay, I want to do it. I said, now how is this going to work? You know, I got this job. I got, you know, you have obligations. You're kind of stuck with these things. You got to uproot yourself and do all these different things. And so finally I said, I just do it. And so once I made that decision, there was a person who had passed away, and they left some money that I can use to take care of everything I needed to take care of, including pay the couple of years I was away in ministerial school. And I realized from that experience, sometimes we can't make a decision based upon visible resources. The decision causes what is invisible at that point to show up. Because most of us have been taught to make a decision based only on what we can see with our visible eye. Because we're living from appearances only what we can see. As I like to say, you know, if somebody asked me, what is an atheist? So an atheist is a person who has no invisible means of support. That's what an atheist is. It has no invisible means of support. So we have to come out of that and keep our attention on the vision, decide, and the invisible means of support begins to show up. Because the idea is that when we decide there's an agreement with our higher self, that higher self that's largely invisible, and if we walk in a direction, the I am will show up. More of the truth of who we are will show up. The image and likeness of God will show up. So sometimes we can't wait for a sign to show up before we move, because signs often follow the decision. Signs follow consciousness. They don't precede that. When we make a decision, everything is working together for our good. Then we get all these signs, and right, we say, it says, go this way. Surreptitious things show up, coincidences. You open up the book, and there's your phrase that you need. It all happened because we've decided. You know, the night before I was getting ready to go to ministerial school, because I had sold all my stuff I had, and the next day I was going to drive up to Missouri, and you know, I was thinking I was having a little buyer's remorse. And I said, what in the world am I doing? This don't make no sense at all. So I went to a Chinese restaurant to have my last supper. You know, the Chinese restaurant, they give you your fortune cookie. And, you know, I took my fortune cookie, opened it up, pulled out a little piece of paper, and it said, you have made the right choice. Follow through. I said, okay, I don't think I need any more signs. All right, I give up. Go forth. So we don't want to look back, except, you know, in the African tradition, there's a word called Sankofa, and it means to turn back and to fetch, or to turn back to learn from past mistakes. The time to look back is to learn, or to turn back and realize that anything anyone has ever accomplished, what our ancestors have done, that you and I can do also, and we can embody that, we can live that. Or we turn back to see how far God has brought us, even when we didn't know what in the heck we were doing. Sometimes I look back and I say, wow, how did I get out of that situation? Because I've been in a few pickles in my life. I didn't know anything, and it worked out. That's the grace of God. So we turn back to celebrate. We turn back to learn from our mistakes. We turn back to forgive ourselves and others. And we realize that if anybody did anything, you and I can also do it. Other than that, do not turn back. Look straight ahead. Anchor our attention in the nowness of this moment, and then we make a decision. Cut away all the excuses. Watch as the dynamic good as within us, this life principle, this power, this presence, this love that is real, becomes part of who we are, and we get everything that we think we need. It's just waiting for us to say yes. The Spirit of God, the universe, is already saying yes. It's saying, well, what are you waiting for? Oftentimes, we think what we see is what we are. You know, we have this body and my past experience, but more of me and you is what we can't see, the real self. And that more reveals itself as we are willing to step out on it. So we look at life and we see where we're walking, trying to get safely to death, or living life on the layaway plan. Save a little bit today, or to have some tomorrow. But in the Spirit of God, there is no tomorrow. There's only the here, the now, and forever. So we look back at the so-called good old days and we say, my God, I thought that was good. You ain't seen nothing yet. I'm just getting started. I plan to soar in 2024. We get and begin again over and over again, standing upon all of our accomplishments and turning our mistakes that sometimes look like tombstones, and we turn those things to stepping stones to greater good, to move on to higher ground. Look unto the hills, look upon the higher consciousness, and realize with God consciousness, all things are possible. Yes. Not something, all things are possible. Now, I didn't say it's all probable, but it's possible. But understand there are untold resources within us, unrealized possibilities within us, waiting to leap into expression. And when we decide to be big, to be more, live God's intended life for us, everything will work for our good, and we will be part of the divine conspiracy. The entire universe will conspire to reveal itself so we can fly, and we'll live the sacred yes, and we'll watch as everything that we think would inhibit, block, delay, or deny the fullness of this presence is disintegrated, falls apart, and destroyed, and goes to the nothingness from which it has come. As it's happening, we may feel a little uncomfortable, but don't look back. As we begin to look at the good old days, don't look back. As you start to pull out excuses to why things may not work out, do not look back. Look straight ahead. Look straight ahead. Keep your eye on the prize. I'm telling you, as they say, God is able, the Spirit of the living God is real. God is our life. The only life that there is. And besides God, there is no other. Do not look back. Move forward and soar in 2024. Peace and blessings to you.
We are grateful for the opportunity to share with you today and hope you've taken something from this Sunday's message. If you'd like to hear more from Spiritual Life Center, be sure to click subscribe on the podcast platform you're listening from. You can find out more about our community on our website at www.slcworld.org. We look forward to being a part of your continued spiritual journey. Wherever you are, God is, and all is well.
Spiritual Life Center.